We're all ready to go today.
Go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Today is April 18th. It's 5 minutes after nine. Senator Hoffman will be just a few minutes late. He's with us today is Senator Huggins, Senator Elton, Senator Thomas, Senator Dyson. What we're going to do, we've got three bills scheduled. We're going to do the first two, one of which, Senate Bill 100, updating some of the substance abuse and mental health program studies. We'll take some action on that, and then we're going to hear a new bill, Senate Bill 76, which is setting up tuition savings plans for foster children. And then we'll go on to SB 53, Senate Bill 53, which is the capital appropriation bill, which I'm sure most of the folks in the audience are here for. That's going to take several meetings to work through that bill. But first, I'd like to start the meeting today with SB 100, Substance Abuse and Mental Health Programs. The intent here is to move the bill today. We've heard this bill yesterday, and then we adopted a sponsor-submitted CS with the attached updated fiscal note today showing zero. And what I'd like to have now is the sponsor come forward, Senator Ellis, and maybe he can just give us a for the folks at home and the ones in the audience that weren't listening yesterday, maybe just give them take a couple minutes just to give us a brief synopsis of the bill and what it does, and then we'll talk about the fiscal note, and then when we're done with taking action on this bill, I would like the sponsor just to continue to stay at the table, and we'll go on into the next bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Thank you very much. For the record, I'm Johnny Ellis, Senate District L, joined by my staffer, Ms. Kate Herring. What the committee substitute that's been adopted does is takes all of the non-controversial good update language for the statutes, state statutes on substance abuse. That's the pregnant women at the front of the line for treatment programs, non-discrimination against faith-based oriented treatment programs in our public facilities, as long as they meet the same criteria as secular programs. And then the very important provision that we have research-based and evidence-based programming for our substance abuse, in recognition that people want to make sure that we're funding the right programs and effective programs. It's a movement across the country of people that are tired of sending public money to programs that may not work as well as they should. So those are, it's kind of an updating or fine tuning of our substance abuse statutes that is long overdue. The second part of the bill was the use of the current involuntary commitment statute for secure detox beds, a pilot project of 10 to 12 beds in a secure facility. That has been set aside, left out for further work by the Finance Committee, and I'm going to convene meetings of stakeholders and the executive branch to try and work on that for a longer term project to get everyone to come to the table, other potential funders. And I heard an interest expressed at the table for reviewing options for a rural program, more expanded program in different communities. And so there's some good work to come, I hope, with the members of the Finance Committee and the Palin administration on that potential future project.
I'd like the record to show that Senator Olson has arrived. Do we have any initial questions for the sponsor? I would like to note that the new fiscal note does reference zero. Can we have a motion to move the bill, Senator Huggins? Or wait, hold it a second. You have a question?
No, that's okay. I was going to.
Could you say, okay, Senator Olson, before we.
Senator Ellis, when do you plan on having the pilot program reinstituted or that addressed? Is there a plan for it in the near future?
Well, through the chair to Senator Olson, the plan would be to work during this next interim with the Finance Committee and the Palin administration to try and have it included in next year's operating and capital budgets, maybe in an expanded form from what I had conceived as part of Senate Bill 100. So I know it's a disappointment to a lot of the advocates and people who were here talking about the involuntary commitment piece. People think we should have done that years ago. It took a long time, I think, for people of various political philosophies to come to this idea that what we're doing now isn't working. We need to intervene with these highest cost, most dangerous individuals. So I'm excited about the opportunity next year, but we're talking about another year going by without having this in place. But it's a big step. Everyone needs to come together on this idea to make it work and for it to be sustainable and successful.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to speak in favor of the pilot program.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any other questions? Okay, Senator Huggins, can we get a motion to move the bill, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that CS for Senate Bill 100, version Romeo, with attached individual comments and zero physical note, as amended, be moved from committee.
Okay. We have a motion to move the bill. Do we hear objections? Seeing no objections, we'll go ahead and move Senate Bill 100 from committee with individual recommendations and attached physical note.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. With that, we'll go on to the second bill of today. Although it won't have the magnitude of interest of possibly the adult generations, it certainly will have a huge impact on the generation that it's targeted at. And with that, I would like Senator Ellis to go ahead and introduce Senate Bill 76, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm very excited about this bill. I really appreciate you having it before you, and I wanted to thank Senator Dyson and others for their advice and support of this bill along the way. This bill was before the legislature previously, and it's back today with even stronger support, no known opposition, lots of enthusiasm for Senate Bill 76 and the ASPIRE program. Mr. Chairman, that's an acronym for Alaska's Youth Succeed When People Invest Resources in Education. I love that. It really is. I can't take credit, though, for the logo and the acronym. It comes from the Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives, a group of wonderful people that I've worked with closely on this legislation. The bill establishes the ASPIRE program, which is designed to connect churches, community groups, nonprofits, businesses, and individuals with foster children for the purpose of providing educational opportunities beyond high school. And as many of you know, there are about 2,000 children in the state of Alaska in out-of-home placement, so-called foster children of various ages. Every year, about 100 of them age out of the system. They're very, I guess the bottom line, Mr. Chairman, is we can't really expect foster parents who are struggling to raise these children and afford all the things that go into raising a child in this day and age. And the grandparents, some relatives that are in charge of some of these children's lives, to be putting money aside for what can be a very expensive college education or voc-tech education. So I just thought government can't do everything. What can we do together with a non-government approach to the education of these children that have very few educational opportunities and some pretty bad outcomes after they age out of the system and out of loving homes? So this came to me as an idea that I patterned on my home state of Missouri and their Believe program as a way to connect a lot of the compassion and generosity of folks in the private sector, from churches to charitable groups, to maybe set aside and in a sense adopt these kids for educational purposes. We're making use in this bill of the award-winning, brilliant, terrific 529 college savings accounts. That's a little misleading because the money, as you know, can be used at any educational institution for any approved educational expense. So while it's a University of Alaska program, and again, award-winning, the monies can be used for any kind of educational program anywhere in the country. So lots of flexibility for these foster children to achieve their potential. That's the broad outline of the bill. My staffer, Mr. Gabe Aceves, is here. He's an expert on the bill and worked with all the stakeholders. But again, it's a very positive step. I appreciate the support, no known opposition, and this is something we can do outside of government to help these foster children succeed. And Mr. Chairman, I know you had some questions. Do you want to take those after the public testimony, if there is any, or?
Well, I thought we could do, I was pausing there for a minute, I thought your trustee worker there would pipe in and work the bill over a little bit, but maybe you could expand on the conversation about what the funds can be used for. Because a lot of times when people hear a college savings plan, they think of university education, and not all children, especially children from troubled families, end up going to and through the university systems. And clearly there's a lot more available than just a four-year or a master's or a doctorate. And if you could elaborate on some of that.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to answer that. For the record, again, my name is Gabe Aceves. I'm staff to Senator Ellis. And I think we have Jim Lynch online who helped create the UA College Savings Program. And I think he'll testify to the fact that it's extremely flexible. It's one of the great. It's one of the greatest things about the program is that folks who have accounts set up can use it for just about any type of education or learning or a lot of job training too, vocational education, and it can be used around the country. So it doesn't have to be, you know, a typical four-year degree at UAA or UAF. It can be 2 years of vocational education in Seattle or Atlanta or wherever. So it's extremely flexible. Anybody who has an account can either go to community college, typical university, vocational education, and it can be used all around the country. So it's extremely flexible in that manner.
So that's our welders and our machinists, our auto and diesel mechanics.
All of that.
That's correct.
Hairdressing.
Yep.
All of that stuff. So it's very inclusive. And could you talk a little bit about the potential portability? Portability meaning if a child doesn't decide to use it as they advance, or do you want me to field that?
Well, it's James Lynch? I can speak to that a little. As far as the accounts go, for the foster kids who have accounts set up in their name, if for some reason they don't use it, the state is the account holder. So if for whatever reason the foster child doesn't pursue any type of education, or they have other means or a different plan, the state can easily change the beneficiary on the account and put it in the name of a child who is likely to use it for whatever reason.
And I would just like to add, and maybe we'll go to James Lynch, but I'd just like to add, in the way the 529s or the college savings plans are structured, they're structured for the transferability if a child doesn't use the funds. So this is nothing that is being created new by the state. That's just standard procedure. If there's, so you can move it from one child to another one if one doesn't go to school, or one grandchild to another grandchild.
Absolutely.
So we've got, we're keeping that type of flexibility. Maybe we can have online on the off-net, we have James Lynch from the University of Alaska. Mr. Lynch, if you're online, could you please go over the bill and give us your thoughts.
Sure. This is Jim Lynch from the University of Alaska. I'm the original drafter of the UA College Savings Plan and actually worked on a committee that drafted Section 529 of the Internal Revenue Code before it was passed. And when we did that, we provided for government agencies and nonprofits to open accounts within these programs at various at the state level, and so we provided for basically programs like this. Although I will admit that at the time I didn't have foster children in mind, but whatever the need is, the program is available for them. Essentially, you had a good description already as to what it can be used for, and the transferability. Most 529 accounts that are owned by individuals, you're limited to transfers to relatives. If they're owned by a state agency or a nonprofit for purposes of scholarships, there are no restrictions on transfer, and the department will make a decision as to who the subsequent beneficiary will be if the funds aren't used by an individual or another.
So Mr. Lynch, the initial draft?
And the proceeds can be used anywhere, virtually anywhere anyway. There are some requirements within Section 529 of the code that limit this to institutions that are eligible for federal financial aid, where the students are eligible for federal financial aid. But that's essentially the only limitation on the use of the money, as long as it's for education expenses.
I'd like the record to show that Senator Hoffman has arrived. The intent of the, or the structure of the original 529s, wasn't it geared more for the grandparents to help fund the grandchild's education, or parents to help fund their children's education?
That's correct. That was the primary purpose. And the reason for that is that over the 70s, 80s, and 90s, the education has been funded, you know, not through grants, through grants, but through loans. And the cost has accelerated tremendously, much, much faster than personal income. And the real problem is, you know, the people at the lower economic, socioeconomic levels will probably have some financial aid available to them, and those that are affluent probably don't need it. And it's really middle America that's not going to have funding for college education. And the purpose was, well, how can we get middle America that maybe has the wherewithal to save. And in Alaska, we're very fortunate to have the Permanent Fund Dividend Program. And with that program, almost everybody has some discretionary income at some point during the year anyway. And we have about 8,000 Alaska residents that check the box every year for their Permanent Fund Dividend to put half of that money into a college savings account, either for them, for the child themselves, or for their beneficiary, whoever they name. We've been very fortunate. The market analysis we did indicates that approximately 56% of our participants come from families with income levels less than $50,000, and that's phenomenal for one of these programs.
So the restructuring of our statutes here then would take this concept of 529s that was originally geared for parents and grandparents, turn that a little bit so other citizens of the state could contribute to the children that don't have parents that are being raised in foster homes, and also allow then corporate contributions into the 529s to help these less fortunate children afford college. Is that correct?
Precisely.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Lynch. Any questions for Mr. Lynch? Okay, with that, I'd like to bring up Mike Leshman. If you can please state your name for the record and who you represent and speak to the bill, I'd appreciate it.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. For the record, my name is Mike Lesman. I'm the Community Relations Manager for the Office of Children's Services. We've worked closely with the sponsor and his staff, and the department supports SB 76. I'd like to thank Senator Ellis for introducing this bill. Children that become wards of the state are sometimes not financially prepared to enroll in post-secondary educational opportunities. The Aspire program would create the potential for their community to assist them in that endeavor. If we believe that our children are our future, then this is very important legislation to all of Alaska. Happy to answer any questions you might have.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Lesman, there's a comment in the one of the sponsor statements here that the reason the bill is necessary is because of confidential issues. Has there been a problem with that confidentiality in the past, and that's why this bill is being brought forth?
If you look at the bill, there's, through the chair, Senator Olson, if you look at the bill, there's a change to the statute 4710.093. And what that change allows the department to do is disclose information about children that have been in the system to the university so that they can set up the accounts, social security numbers, names, birth dates, so forth. That is the piece, Senator Olson, that has prohibited a member of the public from funneling money to an account that's been set up for a child in foster care.
So the answer to the question is no, there hasn't been a problem. Thank you, Mr.
Through the chair.
Through the chair to Senator Olson, you're correct. There hasn't been a problem, but this statutory change is necessary to allow them to work with the University Office of Faith-Based and for this program to work, we have to allow them to share information on a confidential basis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We have any other questions? Thank you for your testimony. Michael Curran. Mr. Curran, if you could state your name and who you represent for the record and speak to the bill, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senators, for giving me the honor of giving testimony this morning on this incredible, what is an incredible bill. My name is Michael Curran, and currently I am the program coordinator for the Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives in the Juneau office. I have worked in the area of social justice and community building and have been a teacher in the state of Alaska for over 20 years and am also an ordained priest, where most of my years in Alaska have been spent in remote and rural communities. I have my testimony here. It's all written out and I can provide you with a copy of this, but I'd like to quickly share a story that is from my heart. A number of years ago, I was reading an Alaska newspaper, and I saw a name in that newspaper, then whose name I will call Isaiah, and a young man of the age of 21. His name was in the newspaper, not in the area of where he was receiving awards or honors, but it was in the area of the obituary column, and where at the age of 21 he committed suicide. It was close to my heart because I knew Isaiah as a young man and as a child where I was teaching. He was a foster child. He transitioned to community. And the incredible thing about this young man was is that he had such a gift. He was intelligent, he was bright, and he always told me, he said, Mr. Curran, what I want to be when I grow up is to be an astronomer. And this young man could have gone to any college in the United States, whether it be Ivy League or a community college, and achieved that dream. To see his name in the obituary column that he died, and after research finding out that he committed suicide because he was homeless and didn't have the opportunity to be able to get the education that he deserved, I think now of perhaps what that story could be if he had been a recipient and be a part of this incredible bill, this Aspire program, this Aspire bill. Our children in this state, the over 2,000 foster children, and now perhaps over 500 who are transitioned to community, these are our most precious commodity. They are our future, and it's our responsibility as a community to see that they have the same opportunities as every other child who perhaps was born to privilege or who had a home, a stable home situation. I applaud, and I'm speaking as not as my program coordinator for the Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives, but I am also speaking as a father, I'm speaking as a citizen, and I applaud Senator Ellis for this visionary and this important bill that I think will benefit many, many children in our future in this state, because they are our future. I want to thank you for the honor you've given me today for my testimony, and I hope that you will also support this Senate Bill 76, Aspire. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for your testimony. Do we have any questions? Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm not sure if you're the appropriate person. I maybe should have asked this when Mr. Lynch was online. How are these, if we call this an asset that's available to a beneficiary, I mean, how are these assets used in the calculation of additional financial aid? For example, would this account reduce the amount of financial aid that might otherwise be available? I mean, is there an offset here?
Let me see if Mr. Lynch is online. Mr. Lynch? Okay, we'll take that question to the bill sponsor.
Can you give me a minute to think about that?
Sure.
We'll get
that'd be fine. Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. We'll have the finance secretary get your testimony, and we'll get a copy, written testimony. We'll get a copy to the committee members. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
With that, I've got a couple of questions for the bill sponsor or his trustee aide. Maybe we could talk a little bit about what's referred to on page 1, line 10, talking about the central office in the bill and what's envisioned by the central office and what kind of issues that may or may not.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That does sound like an expensive phraseology or something that might cost some money. I believe that's a reference, and Gabe can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that's a reference from the drafter to the existing Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives. So I don't believe it's any kind of new structure.
Okay. That's correct. It is a reference to the Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives, who will be tasked with the responsibility of sort of marketing and outreach of the program. They have a vast network of community organizations and nonprofits, churches that they work with on a daily basis. And so they're the ones tasked with sort of getting the word out about the program. We feel like it's a good fit.
There's on page 2, line 9, you know, we talk about monitoring the success of the program, and we spent quite a bit of time on the subject on the previous bill, talking about, you know, if we implement a particular change, how do we monitor it retrospectively to see if it's successful or non-successful. And I'm just wondering if you could speak to how you'd expect to see a review to see if it's successful or non-successful and how that would be accomplished.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm a supporter of the missions and measures efforts that the legislature has made in the past. And of course, the Department of Health and Social Services, Office of Children's Services, all of these folks involved in cooperating to make this work are under missions and measures. And so metrics are important to the legislative branch to evaluate whether we're doing good things with our public resources. We didn't get specific in the legislation about exactly what the metrics would be for the program, but they're pretty clear that they would be the number of children or the number of accounts set up, the number of participants, the number of children going on and pursuing educational opportunities, the amount of money donated from the private sector to these accounts. So they're probably four or five things that we could all think of together that the Office of Children's Services could use to get back to us about. We've not specifically asked them to report on this beyond the usual reports that they give to the legislature, but there are easily ways to measure the success of this program.
Wouldn't you think one of the ways would be by just measuring the number of accounts and the growth of the account size and looking at the donations possibly coming in from corporate Alaska to help the foster children?
Yeah, I think between the Office of Children's Services and especially the Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives, I anticipate, Mr. Chairman, that this program, one of the reasons the Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives is so excited about this is because of the merits of it, but obviously this could become a signature program for them, something that brings religious organization and non-religious organizations together for the benefit of foster kids. And I think it will behoove them to keep track of the success of this program and how much money and how many accounts. So I'm confident, and I can make a commitment to follow this and track this and report back to make sure you all know how things are going.
Some of the younger kids, as they go into adulthood, are a little rambunctious and don't quite go off to school at age 18. Maybe they go off at 21 or 23. There's in the bill on page 2, line 20, there's a cutoff age at 30, so giving some of these younger folks time to settle down a little bit and possibly decide that they need to increase their tool set for a better income level in the future. So maybe tell us what happens when they approach age 30 to their account.
Sure, Mr. Chairman. The way the bill's set up now, at the age of 30, it's one of the cutoffs for a change in the name on the beneficiary of the account. And the reason we picked that number, we worked with Jim Lynch and with the bill drafter, and we had to pick an age, first of all, because the way the accounts are maintained now, a person can hold an account basically forever. We didn't want the state to be in a position where it couldn't change the name of a beneficiary if it was clear that that child wasn't going to use the money for something important or something it was intended to be. So we had to pick an age. Oftentimes, children who are transitioning out of foster care aren't prepared or ready to go right into any kind of educational or job training program. They have a series of transitional services they're trying to work through just to get settled out in regular life. So they don't always jump in right when they're 18 or 19 years old into college or university or vocational education. So we picked an age where they would have plenty of time to get themselves settled, figure out what direction they're going, and yet still an age that we hoped would be fair to cut off if they hadn't used it by then. So,
can you bring back to the committee the federal requirement? I think the federal requirement is age 30 on 529s.
I believe that you're right, although Jim Lynch would be the person to answer that question. In a previous committee, someone asked him what the cutoff was, and he thought that you could hold an account forever, basically. He said that he could have an account if he wanted one now at, 50 or 60 years old. So I might be a little unclear on that. I can we'll, certainly find out and get back.
We'll flush that out and... That's not a real critical issue, but we'll flush that out. And just
Chairman,
one last...
On Senator Elton's question, we're going to need to get back to him about that to give a good answer to the question. It's come up before in the discussions, but to be very specific, I'll have to get back to him about financial aid eligibility.
I got one final question, and that's concerning... people that may want to do the gift, can they specify individual children, or can they just go in and specify that they want to donate, just thinking optimistically that maybe there's a corporate sponsor that wants to gift several thousand dollars but doesn't really have an individual child in mind? What's the process of how they can get that accomplished?
That's an excellent question. This has come up before, and in my home state of Missouri, where I got this idea first, there was an example there of of corporate donations where corporations, Bass Pro, for example, decided to give a huge chunk of money to the state of Missouri Secretary of State for distribution to foster children through these accounts. And they didn't name children or specify the kinds of children, but that was a large corporate donation, a big part of the success of that program. In other examples, people want to say, we want to give money to a girl from rural Alaska who's a victim of abuse and neglect. And of course, there's the anonymity and the protection of the identity of these children. We're very careful about that. But the question of whether you can specify the kind of child or even know a child in foster care in a small community, that's often the case. How can that be handled? And I'll allow Mr. Aceves to get more specific about that.
Yeah, the question has come up before. Basically, we've talked thoroughly about this with the department. They will have a process in place where if a donor knows a specific child who they want to donate money to set up one of these accounts, they can make it happen. So it shouldn't be a problem. In most cases, churches, nonprofits, they won't have identifying information about the child. They'll decide that they want to set up an account, and the department will establish, you know, a criteria for prioritizing these foster kids. And it will be based, I think the biggest two things it will be based on are age and the time, you know, before a kid ages out of the foster care system and their length of stay in state care. So I think there will be a process in place for donors who know of a foster kid, whether it's a relative or a neighbor down the street or whatever that they want to donate to, and there'll be a process for people who want to donate anonymously to a child that they won't know anything about other than maybe age and sex and possibly location.
Okay, thank you. If we could turn our attention just briefly to the fiscal note. Fiscal note has $41,400 on it, and there is some setup costs. There's some brochures that will be printed and a little bit of marketing. Do you want to speak to that a little bit, Senator Ellis? Or?
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. I know it's not a huge amount of money, but it's, you know, every little bit adds up around here, and it's the interest of the Finance Committee. We worked with the Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives, and they convinced me that there was no place to squeeze them or to cannibalize their existing program. I don't want to do that personally, and so they convinced me that that this required some additional resources to be successful. So there's, of the $40,000, $20,000 is for staff time. A portion of one of the few people that, you know, it's a very tiny operation there. Very little state resources, but there would be $20,000 for staff time per annum, and the $20,000 for the print, a very small print TV radio package to get the program launched and let folks know about it across the state. If we don't have some way to get the word out, the program won't be successful. It won't be made use of by folks across the state. So I thought it was a reasonable request. I hope you'll look favorably upon it. And if I thought there was some way to squeeze more resources there, or that this was an unreasonable request, I wouldn't be supportive, but I am.
And I can assume that we'll have at the university, and if you don't have the answer, you can get back to me, that the university then, when they market their 529 plans, would have a portion of the website set up where someone can go online, just click, download the forms, and set an account up or have the procedure to send money in either anonymously or for a child?
We're happy to talk to the university and work with them for their website to include information about the Aspire program. That's an excellent idea. And things like that have been batted around, but we'll make sure that's part of the message.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any other questions for the bill sponsor? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one quick one. I just wanted to confirm my understanding that that in fact the plan holds and disperses the money directly to an institution rather than it going through any other parties.
That's correct. The way the program works is right. The state's the account holder. The state will basically, through the university, release the money directly to an institution that the child has applied and been accepted to.
Thank you. That's good.
For tuition and books and other expenses.
Right. Tuition, books, housing.
Yeah. The kid's not going to get the money to have a big party.
I just wanted to make sure that was my understanding. I just wanted to confirm it. Thank you, though.
No, I appreciate you putting that on the record through the chair.
Do we have any other questions for Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What kind of accreditation requirements are required for some of these institutions to be accepted 429 or 529 money?
Well, through the chair, Senator Olson, I think Jim Lynch touched on it briefly. Is the university or technical institution has to have an accreditation where they receive federal funds. I think that's the only qualifying factor for a 529 account for the institution to be eligible to get those funds.
So you're saying that a private institution can?
Yes. Oh, yes, that's correct.
Oh, yeah.
Even though they're not getting federal funds?
I didn't hear the question. Could you repeat the question, Senator Olson?
The question that I had was that, first of all, what are the accreditation requirements of the institution that they're going to be applying to? And he said something to the effect of they had to be getting federal funds. And so I asked him, what about private institutions that aren't getting federal funds?
They have to be accredited.
Excuse me. They have to be eligible for federal student aid funding.
Oh, I
and
see.
I believe private universities, most of them are. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Do we have anybody from the audience that would like to come forward and speak on this subject? Okay. Seeing none, bring it back to the committee. Any closing comments? Senator Hoffman, can we have a motion, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that we pass out CS for Senate Bill 76 Hess with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
We have a motion on the table to move the bill. Do we have objection? Seeing no objection, we'll go ahead and move the bill from committee with the attached fiscal note and individual recommendations. I'll take a brief at ease while we set up for the next bill.
Thank you very much.
Yes, they are.
I'd like to call in Finance Committee back to order. What we're going to do here today, we're going to start Senate Bill 53. It's going to be probably several days, two or three, going through the governor's request, and then at the end of that, there'll be a few days break while we work on what we're going to look at adding to it from the legislative side, and then we'll get back together and work through the rest of the process. So this is just the beginning. What we're going to do is we're going to be bringing up the different departments, going through the capital request as submitted by the governor of those individual departments. We're not going to be taking public testimony, although I don't see a whole lot of individuals from the public there at this time. That'll come in the future after the capital budget gets put together in a week or so. The comments, as we go through there, we'll try to hold them to a minimum from the committee members on the different departments as we walk through it, just to save on the clock. If there's something that's really a hot issue or a concern, please bring it to our attention. Some of the smaller, less critical questions we could get answered after the meetings or in our offices. We're just going to try to flow through the information. We're scheduled to start back up at 1 o'clock today because there's no way we'll finish this morning or even this afternoon. But we have the operating bill on the floor of the Senate. Depending on the length of time it takes us to deal with the operating budget, we may have to postpone the 1 o'clock time. But clearly, if the Senate is in session, the Senate Finance Committee won't be here either. So we'll post it at the door. If we happen to run late into the 1 o'clock range, there'll probably be a half hour delay so the senators can have some lunch before they come back to the committee. We're going to start with the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. Then we're going to go to Military and Veterans Affairs. The Department of Education will be next, followed by the Fish and Game. Then we'll have the Governor's Office, the Health and Social Services Department, and then Labor and Natural Resources. And to present the bill, there she is, sitting back in the corner, almost out of sight, Ms. Karen Rayfield, the Director of Office of Management and Budget. And if she could please come forward, introduce herself, who she represents, and before you start, Karen, we have on the table, in chronological order, lined up the packets. There's one group that's a little different. It's the amendments, so we won't be going through those, but they're there for informational purposes for the individual senators to go through. And then we'll go through the packets, again, starting with Commerce. And Ms. Rayfield, if the meeting is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. For the record, Karen Rayfield, Director of the Office of Management and Budget. Thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning and talk to you about the governor's capital funding request. The bill before you with the amendments that we have submitted totals $1.3 billion, a little over $200 million of that is general fund. I know that many of the projects that you will be reviewing with agencies today are familiar to you. I know that you've also asked the departments to be as brief as possible so that you can meet your timelines. I know you have a very rigorous schedule. So I appreciate the opportunity and look forward to working with you and your staff as we go through the capital budget. So I'll be in the room this morning as much as I can be, and I just appreciate your time. Thank you.
So do we have somebody from the department that wants to walk through this? If you could please introduce yourself and who you represent. And
good morning, gentlemen, and members of the committee. I'm Samuel Thomas, Administrative Director for the Department of Commerce. The first one I have in my list is reference number 38950, Alaska Energy Authority Energy Projects, $31.7 million. I believe the ADA Executive Director Ron Miller and is also on the line to explain if you need more explanation on that one. The main reason of that $31 million they are requesting here, it is the continuation of the AEA longstanding energy-related programs of bulk fuel upgrades, rural power system upgrades, alternate energy and energy-efficient projects. The bulk fuel upgrades, there were approximately 1,100 above-ground tank farms in 171 remote villages in rural Alaska. Most of these tank farms had a serious deficiency that typically include inadequate dikes to contain fuel spills. Some of the tanks are used or damaged beyond repair, electrical code violations, insufficient securities, and these are the reasons, you know, the Alaska Industrial Development Authority shows in the, you know, explanation. Then they have the rural power system upgrades that AEA gives priority to electric utility system that are in the worst condition. AEA has built a detailed database of electric utility conditions and characteristics. Deficiencies of each utility has been scored with respect to generating equipment, distribution systems, powerhouse structures, and other major physical components. Rural systems are then ranked according to the level of these deficiencies. Some of the criteria they use to process is imminent threat to health and safety, imminent threat of system failure during winter conditions, financial need based of the level of existing rates, average income, availability of other financing and project costs compared with utility revenue. The utility's ability to operate and maintain the facility without future state assistance, or the community's willingness to join an established qualified regional utility. They estimated some close to $100 million to complete the bulk fuel upgrades for the remaining 60 communities identified in the deficiency list. This is a long energy program that has expanded since fiscal year 1999. With the federal funding from Denali commissions. So in fiscal year 2008, AEA anticipate almost $15 million in federal funds. Mainly the funds comes from the Denali commission, Department of Energy, and through AHFC and other federal grants. That's the almost close to $30 million, and then they are using the general fund. Most of it's a $1.2 million. Most of them are matching to those federal funds.
Well, you might as well go to the next issue. We got a whole page full.
The next one is the reference number 38946, community block grants. That is a $6.1 million request. This was in existence since 1980. Therefore, Health and Social Services provides 100% of the funding, which was average at $2.5 million annually. And this coming year in FY08 also, Commerce anticipate almost 2.5 million. Then they have different grants within that block grants, CSBG, Community Services Block Grants, and CDBG, Community Development Block Grants. The CSBG grants mainly goes to one nonprofit organization's rural CAP, because nobody else in Alaska receives such grant, because they are the one, you know, doing most of those needy programs for the poverty level Alaskans. Then they do have two more grants, food and nutrition grants and emergency shelter grants. And they are very small amount. We receive also $130,000 each. The reference number 38943, community development grants, is $11.6 million request. Actually, it's a combination of different programs. One is the FEMA program that we, every year we get close to $300,000 and require a $100,000 match from the state. And that we use it to give technical assistance grants for the initial planning and subsequent construction of flood and mitigation projects to all the local communities. And we have mini grants within that development grants that provide feasibility studies, infrastructure projects, design and engineering studies, upgrade marine facilities and educational facilities. One of the major grant in that one is multi-use facilities grants. It's also provide grants to the communities for the construction and remodeling of multi-use facilities in rural Alaska. This is almost, it comes from the Denali Commission funding. It's almost close to $8 million. We are expecting in 2008, close to that $8 million. Then we have business development to help the individuals desiring to establish and expand tourism-related businesses in rural Alaska. EDA provide $95,000, and we are expecting in 2008 maybe another $200,000 Denali Commission money. Another program within the development grant is the Coastal Zone Management Program. That's also technical assistance to coastal resource districts and commerce. Award these grant funds. The program range from $1 million to $1.3 million. The next request I have is the community. I'm reference number 41789, Kodiak Launch Complex Infrastructure. This is strictly, you know, federal money. There is no general fund is involved. It is a $15 million request. And this money usually comes from the Missile Defense Agency, and they used it for modification as maintenance of the Kodiak Launch Complex to support the satellite launch program.
We'll take a brief at ease. Back on the record. Go ahead. We just got to dig through the packet. The amendments are inserted back, and I was just looking at a misalignment of the numbers. Apparently, they're amendments. So we just keep dropping down, and you pick up the number. Go ahead.
Thank you, Tim. The next one is the reference number 4242. That is Alaska Manufacturing Extension Program. This was in existence since 2005. Every year they get almost $800,000 because there is a matching grant to the federal money. They receive $800,000. This is a nonprofit organization, and they do the nationwide network, not for profit centers, in nearly 350 locations nationwide, and whose sole purpose is to provide small and medium-sized manufacturers with the help they need to succeed. Centers are funded by federal, state, local, and private resources. And they have, last year, I believe, and to date, almost 800 artists already signed with the Alaska Native Arts Foundations, so that WebNet program is really improving. That helps the local people to sell their product through the internet. The next number I have is an amendment 32590, language section, electrical emergencies. That is a general fund $240,000 and rural electrification for $90,000. And this funds provides technical support when an electric utility has lost and will lose the ability to generate or transmit power to its customers, and the conditions is to threat to life and life, health, and property in the community. Water and sewer systems are also subject to freezing if they don't have the electric power. So because of these hazardous situations, they are requesting a $330,000 total funding for the electrical emergency. The next one is an amendment 433 to 433-23, Alaska Energy Authority, Apache Act, Bethel Intertie Right-of-Way, and Site Control.
Could you please repeat that where you're at?
Amendment 433-23.
Page 19.
Skip two pages.
Got it.
Apache Bethel Intertie. It's a general fund request for $84,000. This is a AEA owned the electrical distribution line between Apache and Bethel is in the process of being upgraded from a single distribution line to a three-phase line through a federal grant to Pakiak Isnarak Power, difficult to pronounce, Power Company. And this is a 10.5 mile AEA-owned distribution line between Pakiak and Bethel, built in 1980 as a single-wire ground return demonstration projects. And AE assisted this one in applying a Department of Agriculture utility system grant to upgrade the line from a single wire ground return to a three-phase line. The grant application was successful, and $2.7 million was awarded to the Apakiak Power Company for this project. Once the power upgrade is completed, AEA intends to transfer the distribution line to the Apakiak Power Company. The next one I have Amendment 42941 for our agency. $28 million. This amendment is the name change from the AEA Swan Lake Tie Intertie to clarify that this appropriation is a four dam for power agency will be a grant to a named recipient through AEA. This is a major infrastructure project in Southeast Alaska. 57-mile project will connect the Lake Tai hydroelectric project south of Wrangell with the Swan Lake hydroelectric facilities near Ketchikan. The project is a critical link of the Southeast Alaska Intertie project envisioned to interconnect all of the Southeast Alaska. When completed, a primary transmission line will be in place and an operational from Ketchikan to Petersburg. And 55 million have been expended to date, including permitting, design and construction activities. An additional 46.2 million is estimated to be needed to complete the project. When it becomes operational, this intertie will provide significant economic benefit to Southeast Alaska. The next one in my list, Mr. Chairman, Amendment 40500. Morris Thompson Culture and Visitor Center in Fairbanks. The total request here, it is a $3 million general fund. This one, it is a project that has brought together the Alaska Native community and the Fairbanks community to provide a cultural and visitor center under the name of the most highly respected Alaska Native leader, late Morris Thompson. There are a lot of more than 28 business and community leaders around Alaska serve on a private fundraising leadership team because they believe in this project. To date, they have secured a $22.2 million towards their $29 million goal, $16.5 federal funds and $3.1 the state funds that was appropriated by the legislatures in fiscal year 05, 06, and 07, then the $250,000 from the Fairbanks North Star Borough, another donations from private sector is $2.3 million. Therefore, they are requesting another $3 million in this one to finish this visitor center. Once it's finished, this will be a visitor center for Fairbanks Convention. They can use it for, actually, they can use it for a Fairbanks Convention Center as a convention center, then Visitors Bureau and the Alaska Public Lands Information Center. That's the main, you know, goal of this visitor center. The next one in my request is Amendment 42927. Data security and encryption information technology. The department, the banking and security within the Department of Administration, they're having problems when they downloaded data from a financial institution. Each time when they download, the bank examiners, when they go to a financial institution and download information that contains almost 46,000 social security numbers. Therefore, they do not want to lose any of such data in private hands because such things wasn't encrypted. Therefore, we were asking a $200,000 to support this program so we can, you know, purchase a software program to do the encryption. The last one in my request, Mr. Chairman, Amendment 41959. Arctic Winter Games Teams, Alaska. In FY 2008, they have requested $275,000 general fund. $400,000 is requested to defray part of the increasing transportation cost and to ensure that athletes can participate in 2008 Arctic Winter Games being held in Yellowknife Northwest Territories in Canada. The athletes selected to represent Alaska are required to pay a major part of their travel as well. The project funds $275,000 of the original request. For each game since the first games in 1970, the state of Alaska has funded a portion of this program. For Alaska to continue to field a team at future games, continued state support is needed. For many young Alaskans, the international event is a pivotal time in their lives. Over the years, many young Team Alaska athletes have expressed how important the experience of the games has been in their lives. It is the goal of Arctic Winter Game Team Alaska to keep the registration fee paid by participants at a level reachable by all young Alaskans.
Could we go back to, I think that was your last one, could we go back to page 15? And either I,
which page?
Page 15. I just don't have that one marked. Or the next one, which is the language section on electrical emergencies and then followed by the language section on the impact grant program. Do you want to, did you skip those and, or did I just not hear you in the presentation?
He went over that one.
You went over that one?
$330,000.
Right.
Yep. Okay. He went over 330, Mr. Chairman. He went over 330,000, but I was wondering why he didn't do the NPRA.
Okay. So let's go to page 17 and touch on the NPRA.
The NPRA, I don't have that in here, but.
Page 17.
That is a language section change from originally we thought we were going to have a $40 million. Then later we learned that it's going to be only, you know, $13 million. Therefore, we would like to change from 40 to 30, $13 million. That was the language amendment.
Okay. And that concludes your testimony?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Do you have any questions before we try to move? Senator Olson, you look like you're ready to.
Yes.
Go ahead.
One more, Mr. Chair, excuse me. One thing is I missed here, it is Institute of North.
Can you please repeat that?
North.
Institute of North, that is the amendment number 41953.
Could you reference the page number?
Last page, I
think. Last page, page 25. The Institute of North requested a $100,000 general fund. after a 10-year as an off-campus program of Alaska Pacific University, the Institute of North became its own 501c nonprofit educational organization in 2004 and continues to be a leader in advancing issues related to economic growth and sustainability in Alaska and throughout the Arctic region. State of Alaska funding will enhance and expand programs that can strengthen the Alaska economy and improve needed Arctic transportation and communications infrastructure. The Institute is engaged in several programs to create a connected Arctic through new air routes, maritime shipping, and telecommunications. In 2007, the state provided $75,000 as federal earmarks diminished. The Institute requested state support $150,000 for fiscal year 2008. These projects provide partial funding of $100,000. I believe that concludes the presentation, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Olson, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going back to the NPR Impact Grant Program, you said that there was $40 million initially.
Initially, it was $40 million, yes.
$40 million, and the number has been changed to $13 million.
Through the chair. That is correct, Senator.
Do you have an explanation for that?
I do not know a whole lot of detail about it, but there was something happened on the land issue over there. That's why it's reduced to $13 million. But I will find it for you.
Yeah, if you could look into that and then get back to the committee.
Yes, sir.
On that question. Do we have other questions for the department? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll move on to the next department. Department of Military and Veterans Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is John Kramer. I'm the Admin Service Director for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Mr. Chairman, we have six items for your consideration. Reference number 42900, it's Army Guard Facilities Projects. It's asking for $750,000 of federal and $750,000 of general fund match. What this project would do is we have 96 different locations that we have National Guard facilities around the state, all of them with an average age of about 30 years, and we have a deferred backlog of about $17.4 million, and we're just working through different types of improvements to those facilities that have been used over the last 30 years. I'm going to abbreviate the narrative. I hope you don't mind if you want me to expound upon any of them. I would be happy to do that. Mm-hmm. Next item is reference number 429930. It's the Anchorage Readiness Center Security Compliance. It asks for $250,000 in federal, as well as $50,000 in general fund match. Currently at the Anchorage Armory, we have, of course, the headquarters for the Army and Air National Guard, as well as the Division of Homeland Security. In front of that facility was a roadway with all of the types of activity that have been going on. We need to provide some greater security for that building and those offices that are adjacent to that roadway, and so this project would take out that roadway but still allow for emergency type vehicle use to get access to the front of the building. The next item is reference number amendment 35774. It's the Military Youth Academy Deferred Maintenance Renewal and Replacement. It asks for $1 million in general fund authorization. That facility, too, most of the structures are over 30 years old. We're seeing the highest number of cadets going through that program, and the facilities, being the age that they are needing some improvements, especially with the magnitude of students that we're running through there. This would upgrade and improve latrines, showers, dining facilities, and some of those items that we just have to improve with the numbers that we're running through there. Next item is reference number 42901, State Homeland Security Grant Program. This asks for $9,500,000 in federal authorization. This is our grant program that we push out to local communities and first responders. Been ongoing for a number of years now, and it just helps those communities better prepare for events that could happen in those areas. Next item is reference number 42898, National Guard Counter Drug Support Program. This asks for $100,000 in federal. This is our share of the counter drug program asset forfeiture that comes in, and this program uses these funds to purchase items that help them in detection and other types of things for illegal activities that take place in the drug world. Final item, sir, is amendment 43330, and this is titled Compliance Cleanup Site Restoration. In all of those National Guard facilities around the state, there are a number of areas that need to be cleaned up. We have an estimate of about $28.5 million in site cleanup type activity that needs to take place. This is for cleanup of for groundwater and soil areas. So that ends my testimony unless you have some questions.
Okay. Senator Hoffman has a question.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, are you using local help on the cleanup sites in the rural communities?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, anytime that we have the ability to be able to use local, we do. Many of these projects aren't large scale in nature, and we will do everything that we can to utilize local assets that would be available. However, I will tell you that we will contract this out and emphasize the use of local labor, but I can't guarantee that.
And the final question that I have, Mr. Chairman, is what's the status of the Bethel Readiness Center that was under construction?
Through the chairman, Senator Hoffman, we don't have that on this list, as you know, for the department. We're in the process of working with Guard Bureau to secure federal funding to complete that project.
Is there any expected timetable that you have?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, right now the timetable is no later than 2011. We anticipate 2 years from now having completion on that project.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Along the same line, some projects were done in not necessarily these villages, but a larger number of villages on the Seward Peninsula several years ago, and they were done anticipating the work be done. There was a training program put in place to train the local folks first in anticipation. It was a fairly short training program, and necessary instructors sent, people accumulated in some particular area. You might want to consider that be done to address the needs, because those people do need training. It makes them more qualified for the workforce for future work too as well. So, and as we're looking at a gas line, just getting people in the mode of getting trained and understanding how it can take place would be helpful. So it's not necessarily a question, it's more a comment, I guess. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator Thomas. Any other questions? Okay, thank you for bringing your department forward for consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
With that, we have an enthusiastic participant charging the table from the Department of Education and Early Development.
Great, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Eddie Jeans. I'm the Director of School Finance for the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development. Mr. Chairman, we have seven projects before the committee today, five school construction and two major maintenance. Mr. Chairman, the legislature has provided funding for all seven of these projects in prior years. And basically what's happened is we had increases in material and labor costs due to the effects of Hurricane Katrina for some of our projects. And then other projects were funded 2 years out. In other words, the legislature made an appropriation in FY06 for FY08. By doing that, we didn't provide appropriate escalation to those projects so that the districts could build the schools that they qualified for. So, Mr. Chairman, the first one on your list is Amendment 43-328. This is a Russian Mission School. It's a new school, K-12 school in the Lower Yukon School District. They're requesting an additional $5,082,761. And as I mentioned, this did receive previous funding of $18,863,000 for a new K-12 school. The next item, Mr. Chairman, is Amendment 36-594. This one here is the Bethel Regional High School renovation phase two. We're requesting $4,458,824 for this. Here again, this is due to cost escalations. The next project, Mr. Chairman, is 36-736. This is for a new K-12 school in Arctic Village. We're requesting $3,276,004 for this project. The next project, Mr. Chairman, is Amendment 36-737. This is for the new school in Kaufman Cove in Southeast Island School District. For this project, we're requesting $1,923,207. Mr. Chairman, the next one is Koniginek in the Lower Kuskokwim School. It's Amendment 36-741. We're requesting $5,645,676 for this project, and this is to build a new K-12 school. The next item, Mr. Chairman, is Amendment 36-709. And this one is for Fort Yukon. And this is a major maintenance project. It's a gym renovation. We're requesting $1,442,554. Mr. Chairman, the last one is Amendment 36-710. This is the Kilbuck Elementary School replacement in Bethel. We're requesting $6,152,451. Mr. Chairman, those are the seven projects that we're requesting funding for. And as I mentioned, these projects had received previous funding, but there's not sufficient funds to build the schools that they qualify for under our regulations. And so, because the legislature has made the investment in those schools, we'd like to get the additional funds to complete them.
Okay. Well, Mr. Jeans, could we go to page four, please?
Yes, sir.
I'm going to use page four, which is the Kaufman Cove, Southeast Island School District, Kaufman Cove being located for the folks at home on the north end of Prince of Wales Island. Happens to be in my district, so I'm more comfortable using that as a discussion topic. The concern I have here is just from a policy standpoint that when we deal with our schools, both rural and urban, but in particular in small urban communities and rural communities, if we couldn't, as we go forward beyond, you know, these schools, but if we couldn't look at some form of school design that could be repeated, if we had three or four different options, or depending on the size of the student base and or, you know, the climate conditions, to try to get away from or modify some of the escalating construction costs. In particular, when we have a site like Kaufman Cove that is in need of a new school, they have a small population, you know, and they're trying to grow their community. The state, you know, being responsible for education, ends up putting in a substantial amount of money for a new school, but clearly there's got to be a lot of communities around the state that are of equivalent size where we could, instead of paying architects to basically design a school, which they've already done before, you know, if we couldn't copy some of these designs or cookie cutter them, has the department ever looked at trying to streamline costs? And I'm not talking about ending up having the state look like Russia with some of their architecture, but.
Mr. Chairman, you raise a good issue here, and I believe what you're referring to are prototype schools of particular sizes. We have a bond reimbursement grant review committee that we work with that helps us address these issues, and actually there's two members from the legislature that sit on this committee. One of them sitting at the table here today, Senator Hoffman, represents the Senate. And if I may, Senator Hoffman is a new member to the committee, so we haven't really gotten into this discussion. But the committee has looked at prototype schools in the past. It's a very difficult issue for us to address because of the varying climates and weather conditions and terrain in which we have to build our schools in Alaska. We have developed a position paper on that I'd be happy to share with the committee. It works really well in places like Anchorage and Fairbanks where they're building elementary schools. But when we started looking around the state and the varying sizes of schools, it just didn't seem real feasible to the committee.
Maybe you could, you know, bring forward that position paper, and I'll work with Senator Hoffman on the concept with his involvement in that committee. And that concern even goes to some of my constituents in Kaufman Cove, as I've discussed the school with them and worked with them trying to get a new school built. One of the concerns they have is the cost of the new school. At that time, it was just a theoretical cost. There was no actual, you know, school within the budget. But then not only do we have the cost of the school, but the community was concerned about the cost of ongoing operations. And I think that is commendable of a community to be concerned. What is the state doing with the cost of schools and the operations, and particularly an REA that all of the costs virtually fall back to the state? So this is an issue that is, you know, at the grassroots level coming up to the legislature, asking us to try to streamline the cost of education as far as the construction and management of the schools, so we could have theoretically more new schools or newer schools in better condition around the state.
Mr. Chairman, those are all very good issues that you're raising, and we work very closely with the Division of Energy where we can to, when they're putting new power plants in some of these remote communities, that we get them located next to the school so we can use waste heat off of those power plants to support the school operations. So these are all issues that we have to look at as we move forward with the construction of these new schools.
Okay, thank you. And I think we're going to be facing this in DOT, changes the cost going forward on construction projects. So this is not just a school issue. It's going to be statewide. Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would use your area school as an example as well, since I don't have one in here. But I want to echo the same concern. I think there is the opportunity to not necessarily make the cookie-cutter school, but to make sure that you do address the issues and the needs. But I know architects like to put their stamp on things to make them look like their particular project, their art. So I think it's worthwhile doing. We do have the Cold Regions housing project. We have other things that have been done where people took this into consideration. I think it'd be helpful to kind of get some of those folks, some other folks in the room with you when you're discussing this. Like I said, I don't want everything to look like it would in Russia or something like that, but at least, you know, to try and make sure that the roofs, the heating systems and things like that are as efficient and well-built as they could possibly be. So just a comment. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Senator Allen.
Thanks. And I'm just going to take this opportunity to ask something of the department also. I mean, if you look at this, again, using the example that the chair has brought up, I mean, the escalation of cost is 36%. For the project, and I'm curious as to whether or not the department has gone back to the new construction or the major maintenance list and tried to refigure what the costs are there. I mean, in 2 years, a 36% price hike seems to me to be quite large, and I'm wondering if it has meant that you're amending the other projects that are on the list. So that we've got a good idea of what those projects actually might cost, as we get to them.
Through the chair, Senator Elton, we have a cost estimating program there at the department that we run all the projects through when we put them on the list. The cost escalations associated with Hurricane Katrina were clearly unforeseen, and so we could not have built that into our cost model. But the effects of appropriating funding for projects 2 years out, we can address that when the legislature is building the capital budget. And the legislature has done this a couple times now where they've provided school construction money to the department 2 years ahead, yet has not escalated those projects appropriately. And we're here willing, ready to help if the legislature goes down that road again. In fact, we had to do a report on the effects of the GO bonds a couple years ago. And in that report, I identified that as an area of weakness that we need to address when the legislature wants to provide forward funding for construction.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Thank you for your testimony. And like I mentioned earlier, we're going to face that with our gas line. We're going to face it with our roads and bridges.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We'll try to get through one more. Department of Fish and Game.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm Tom Lawson, Admin Services Director for Fish and Game. The first item that we have in front of you, I just want to acknowledge, it's Amendment 42112. That was a project where we didn't get the federal funding for, so we're just going to withdraw that from the capital budget. The second item we have in front of you is reference number 30432, and it is sport, fisheries, and recreational boating access. This is for a total of $2.8 million. $2.1 million is federal receipts, and $700,000 is Fish and Game Fund. This is an annual request that allows the Division of Sport Fish to continue construction and upgrade of their boating and sport fish access projects statewide. Basically, the funding is on a three-to-one basis, as I explained. The federal aid and sport fish Restoration Act mandates that 15% of the federal funds available to each state be set aside for boating access improvement projects. So if we don't use any of that federal funds, it goes back to Fish and Wildlife Service. Basically, these projects improve recreational boating and sport fish access for all the users in the state. The next item we have in front of you is reference number 42983. This is a language section. This is the sport fish hatchery construction investment earnings for a total of $3.3 million. This project will allow the Division of Sport Fish to utilize investment earnings on the Alaska Sport Fish construction account to at least partially cover the unanticipated increases in the cost of construction related to the new hatcheries in Fairbanks and Anchorage. Through the passage of SB 147 in 2005, the Alaska Sport Fish construction account was established after the sale of the state sport fish revenue bonds. Those bonds were sold in April of 2006. We set this whole thing up so that the use of the investment earnings was planned for. We worked with the revenue staff to come up with a language, so this was all planned for. The final fish and game project that we have in front of you is Amendment 43322. And it is a statewide deferred maintenance, repair, upgrades, and equipment. This is for $1 million of general fund. This request provides for repair, maintenance, renovations of various facilities statewide, vessel and aircraft, repair and maintenance, upgrades to various facilities, and the purchase of field equipment. In the past, we've actually separated these out into different projects, but this year we put them all into a single appropriation project. And I have one other item that is actually in the governor's office budget, and they asked us to actually present it. And that is reference number 33647. And just, it's.
If you could hold a second. I don't think we have that, do we?
I don't.
This one?
Something new?
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, it's entitled the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund, and it's for $22 million of federal receipts. In the federal fiscal year 2007 legislation, there's $22 million for the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund, otherwise known as PCSRF. This fund was actually established in Congress in FY 2000 as part of a suite of legislative initiatives that actually went along with the ratification of the 1999 Pacific Salmon Treaty between the U.S. and Canada. So the coordination of the individual state funding is through the various governor's offices, but there is a memorandum of understanding between the U.S. Department of Commerce and us, which designates Fish and Game as the program manager of these funds. The MOU actually specifies how we're supposed to utilize these funds, and most of the money that comes through is actually designated projects, but there is other funding as well. So the state intends to use the salmon funds over a five-year period, and the overall objective is to assure that Alaska salmon and salmon fisheries are sustainable and continue to provide jobs and income for Alaskan families. And with that was the last project I had, Mr. Chairman.
Do we have any questions? Senator Elton.
Just very quickly, and thanks for the presentation. Why is the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund in the governor's office if, in fact, it's the department that is making the decisions on projects to be funded?
through the chair, Senator Olson, Senator Elton. As I understand it, this is just something that's set up on the federal side of things. So in every state that gets these fundings, and it, basically all the Pacific states get the funding, the first point of contact of the federal funds is the governor's office, and they in turn then work with the various departments within their states to manage the funds.
And just a request, Mr. Chair, could I get a list of the projects that were funded and the amounts they were funded for over the last 3 or 4 years?
Absolutely.
And if you can get Tom. To my office, and I'll get it distributed to the committee members.
Okay.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Okay. With that, what we're going to do is stand at ease until we're done with the floor session. And if we get done relatively quickly, which is unlikely, seeing that we're doing the operating budget, we'll convene back at 1 o'clock. If the floor session in the Senate runs late, we'll have a half hour break after the floor session, and then we'll come back, reconvene at the finance table. We'll start with the Department of Health and Social Services and walk through their portion of the capital budget. With that, we're at ease.